That Great Business Show, Ireland's best business podcast.
Welcome to episode 162 of That Great Business Show, where we bring you more great tips, insights, and unique business opportunities on every episode, delivered in our commute-friendly package. That's thanks to our sponsor, Daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. If you're looking for your first home, or maybe you're looking to upsize or downsize, make sure you visit daft.ie to find the next place you call home. I'm Conal O'Moran, Faultister. Coming up, taking the pain out of paying your bills. But sorry, no. Team GBS is not picking up the tab for you, but a young Irish company has an elegant solution. And how to sell the same business twice. Yes, it's possible. And you will learn about this on this episode, episode 162 of That Great Business Show. We've just spent a week in the US finding out how to make expanding into that vast market easier for your business. If you have plans to head for the US, make sure to sign up for the podcast, because we will be popping 13, I think, interviews out over the coming weeks, including a personal invitation from Ned Lamont, Governor of Connecticut, to Team GBS. That's you, our loyal listeners, to locate your business in that place called Connecticut. It's so beautiful. And you can scout out some more great business locations over there if you sign up for the podcast. It's your last chance to possibly win 2 return flights from Dublin to Hartford, Connecticut, flying direct with Aer Lingus. Sign up at thatgreatbusinessshow.com. You're busy, so we keep it that simple. All these tips and insights are brought to you thanks to Daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website, the best place to buy or sell your home in Ireland.
If it's for sale, it's on Daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. Whether you're looking for your first home or planning your next move, make sure you're on Daft.ie, the best place to buy or sell in Ireland.
Travel to Connecticut, USA with Aer Lingus service to Bradley International Airport. With the daily flights from Dublin to Hartford, we make business travel to Connecticut easy. Save time with US pre-clearance, enjoy Aer Lingus award-winning flight service, and experience the convenience of Bradley International Airport, perfectly situated for your travel needs. Learn more and plan your next business trip at aerlingus.com.
You build up a successful business and sell it. And then you sell it again. So how do you do that? Stay listening and we'll share the secret formula. Ken Fitzpatrick has been CEO of the Digital Marketing Institute, also known as DMI, since 2013. Ken and founders Ian Dodson and Anthony Quigley sold the company first to US-based growth equity investor Spectrum Equity in a 26 million euro transaction, the latter two exiting from the business, but Ken stayed on. And in 2023, DMI was acquired again, this time by the UK-based BPP Education Group. So how do you do that? Sell the same company twice? Ken Fitzpatrick, welcome to That Great Business Show.
Great to be here, Conal.
You managed to sell it twice, but it's not that straightforward, really, is it?
No, it's easy to say in a couple of sentences, but
I'm messing with the headline, am I?
Yeah, a little bit. Messing with my head. Could think it was easy.
So, first of all, the first sale, that was grand, that was understood, and that was a nice deal.
Yeah, it was.
And then I think more people came knocking on your door. What's so gorgeous about the DMI, the Digital Marketing Institute, that everybody loves you?
Well, I think we are the biggest of what we do in the world, which is a great thing to say.
It is fantastic. And from humble origins.
for all the way from Ireland. I've been a big believer for a long time in building great businesses from Ireland. We're very capable of it. We have the right attitude. We have smart people. And we have an outward-looking sense of the world. And I think those things together allow us to do that.
And digital allows you as well, because correct. Who cares where you are?
Correct. So the business did actually start as a classroom training business. We did a few things.
That's quaint, isn't it?
It is, yeah. People still learn in classrooms an awful lot, including our courses. But as a core business, we moved it online. So as you say, what does that allow you to do? Sell overseas. Second thing we did was we said we'd focus on a certification standard as opposed to just being another training company. So in accounting, in project management, in IT, for years, if you've got a certain certification standard on your CV, recruiter knows you can do the job, gives you more money, gives you a promotion. We decided to become that for digital marketing. So when we set out to do that, we had to do it in a certain way, which we did. Third thing we did was we hired a brilliant bunch of people in the management team.
You're talking about yourself again?
Yeah. It's all about me. No, I was once told by a very smart person to hire people who are much smarter than you and who are better than you. And that's the best advice I've ever received.
And many people have mentioned it on the podcast. Not everybody takes it.
I don't know why, because it makes everybody's life much easier if you do. So that's something I definitely believe in to a great extent.
Go back to the certification. Who certifies you? Because you need somebody who's so far up here to certify you. But if they were so good at getting up there, surely they should be running the courses themselves?
Yeah, it's a good question. And the answer is you become a certification standard by becoming a certification standard. So my wife is a chartered accountant. So who decided that the ACA were going to be the body that controlled chartered accountants?
That's a good question.
Yeah, they did. Okay. So there's no divine power anointing them from on high.
But you have to be accepted. And I presume ACCA is known the worldwide. Yeah.
Correct. You do have to be accepted. Volume is the king there. So the more you do, the more people accept it. And it becomes a bit self-fulfilling at that point. Because if you are the badge that people want, then the next guy wants it, and so on and so forth. So volume is the way. So time is important in order to achieve that. We've certified 65,000 people now all over the world, but that's actually increasing and accelerating over time. So that's how you do it. You're credible, you hang around. One big thing for us was when we were in the US, which is our biggest market now, we did a deal with the American Marketing Association. So if you did their course and become certified with them, it's actually our course you do, and you get a cert from them and us.
Oh, so you've got a white label, is that kind of it?
Pretty much. You know you're doing a DMI course, very much so up front, and they're very open about that. They just didn't have the resources to run their education side of their business. So we did a deal with them, and that gave us instant credibility in the US. If you're a US marketer and you're looking at an option and one of them comes from the American Marketing Association, you're going to say that's okay, even if you hadn't heard of DMI.
And if you are teaching or tutoring in the US, do you use Irish or US tutors?
It's a good question. We use a mix. So,
because I'm just in from the States this morning, and I was just thinking, if you're trying to convince them that you know everything, Americans like that you're one of them.
Yeah, so there's a difference between a subject matter expert who may be the world's leading expert in e-commerce and somebody who's actually good at presenting in front of a camera. So there's often a difference between the two. And in terms of presenters, the US market actually likes the Irish voice and the Irish way. So we've used Irish presenters, we've used UK presenters, and we've used US presenters. So that's really the mix we use all over the world. And that works. People get that.
Well, I get the model where you use the American Marketing Association, is it? But if you're going elsewhere, I always want to know, how, doesn't matter whether you're making whiskey or selling brushes, how do you find your business? How do you find your customers?
So there's an amazing thing called digital marketing, which we teach people about.
Touché.
So
Terry out there has just broken down laughing because, okay, I should have known that. Okay.
So very much we eat our own dog food. But the other way we did it, which is quite interesting, is we have partners. So it's a way of expanding internationally without huge expense entering a market. So we find universities and private training companies in markets all around the world. We license our content to them.
So there is a revenue share.
Correct. That's how it works. So some people deliver it, some people just refer people to us. There's a whole load of different models, but it works.
And your daily work life, is it contacting these potential partners and chatting to them and keeping them sweet and...
Yeah, so that's one part of it. The other part is we still sell direct to consumers. We also sell to companies who are looking to upskill maybe a whole department of people. But the other part of it is looking at the products we're going to produce for the future. It's a pretty fast changing sort of a sector. So we need to stay on top of what's coming down the road. I think there's three audiences I have to deal with. I have to keep the staff happy. I have to keep the shareholders happy, and I have to keep the customers happy. So that's actually how I fill my day between those three people.
And you've also, and I know it's always good in business to get lucky. You've got really lucky because marketing has gone up the ladder. It used to be out the back. Now it's up, as the Americans would like to say, in the C-suite. Marketing is driving so much business.
Absolutely. That's been a big change. Now I'm, you know, showing my age now, but left college in 1991 and there wasn't even internet-based marketing at that point. So it was good old press and traditional advertising, which still works very well, but has changed a huge amount, particularly in its acceptance, as you say. I was lucky. I worked for companies where marketing was always seen as important, but I knew a lot of people who worked in areas where they were sort of fighting for every last scrap, but that's kind of gone now. It is pretty, I think because it's so measurable now, a lot of companies really look to it as an important part of what they do.
This thing about measurability, now that is, and I don't care what you say, is suspect because there is so much fiddling going on in digital and in recording or measuring digital. Do you're nodding in agreement.
Yeah, I think there's fiddling in any metric, in any business, to be perfectly honest. I don't think it's just in marketing. I think you want to tell a story, you can tell a story. But trends and general direction of travel, if you like, do emerge from the data. And if you do, you're not going to get it 100% correct. But if you get it generally right, then things generally point you in the direction of what's good and bad, particularly when it comes to customers.
And you mentioned that some companies are getting entire departments up to speed in digital marketing. Is that outside the marketing department? In other words, are accounts or are whatever being given a digital marketing training?
Yeah. So
that's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. So what typically they get is what you might call digital marketing for non-digital marketers. Just a basic understanding, terminology, key metrics. Accountants need to know when somebody asks them about a budget, whether it's been spent correctly or not. HR people need to know it from employer branding. So everybody needs a touch of it, to be honest.
And everybody has their prejudices. And the two words, accountant and marketing, you know what I'm going to say next.
I don't, but...
have you actually seen large numbers of accountants actually doing your marketing courses, yeah?
Yeah, increasingly so.
That's very interesting.
And do you know why? Because a lot of companies are undergoing digital transformation projects.
Yeah, absolutely,
That's in pretty much every large company. And it's in those type of projects that sort of upskilling happens right across the board.
Go back to the original sale, which was chunky. So Spectrum buy you. And why did Spectrum sell you?
So Spectrum are a private equity firm. So it's not really in their nature to leave their business to their kids. They're typically on a 4 or 5 year cycle for the sale of businesses. It's what they do. So when they bought us, it was always with a view to selling us in the future. But they were a great buyer, really helpful, very hands-off, let us get going with what we wanted to do, but also were there to help if we really wanted.
And private equity always wants its pound of flesh. And they bought you for 26 million. Mm. What did they sell you for?
More than that.
I knew it. I looked. Could I find it?
No. It's a well-guarded secret, but no, it was
well done anyway.
It was a successful second exit.
And the nice one is because it's BPP, and were you telling me that they are in north of England?
They're original base in Leeds and Manchester. They have offices in London and in a few places around the world. Very much professional education, accountants, lawyers and the like.
And they in turn are backed by another investor called TDR, is that it?
TDR Capital, based in London, who are owners of Asda, for example.
And what do they want out of you next? I mean, they've already taken more than a pound of flesh out of you, but there's obviously a bit more to go.
Yeah, so the big thing for BPP that they were interested in us, one was we're an online education provider. They do an awful lot of face-to-face still. Secondly, they wanted a certification standard that we own. They saw value in that.
But that you own. Now, that's very interesting. Yeah. You say you own it, but it's, you know, you made it.
Yeah, we made it and own it.
but if I wanted to go off and try to do the same, I could. There's nothing stopping me, sure.
There's nothing stopping you. What we have is the weight of volume and
volume,
expertise.
Back to volume again,
So you create a protection for yourself by doing it for longer and bigger than everybody else.
And I presume when you were selling to BPP, PP and TDR, that you were able to paint them a very gorgeous and rosy picture in the next couple of years.
Yes.
What did you tell them?
We told them what we're actually doing. So we very much...
And a little bit more.
Yeah, well, no. We told them the truth, to be honest. But for us, it was about... We were coming to the end of our cycle with Spectrum. They were very happy to stay in with us. But BPP were interested because they had a gap in digital marketing in their offering. And to be honest, we saw two things. One is they have a university. We can work with them on new products.
A university? What kind of university?
BPP University. They law degrees, accounting, etc. Nursing. They train about half the NHS staff.
Really? Half?
Yeah. That's what I believe, yeah.
That's chunky.
Yeah, it's pretty large.
It's very, very, very big.
It is.
I think the NHS might employ 1 million people.
Oh, do they?
I think, I mean, it's huge.
Yeah.
The our HSE employs 110,000. So just pro rata, you can be very quickly be up at 1 million quid. But 1 million people, 1 million quid, far more than 1 million quid. Presumably that you also have other big ideas about other outside of marketing courses or...
No, we'll stick to the knitting, to be perfectly honest.
And marketing only?
Yeah, because we can be a lot bigger. So Project Management Institute have certified 500,000 people over the last 50 years. There's a pretty big market of marketers out there who still could avail of our services, etc. So BPP is a real good way for us to actually achieve that. They can drive a lot of volume because they're in the same education space and they can really help us grow. The other thing is, it's great culture in the business and it was very similar to ours. So, and that was really important to me, that I didn't want to sell the business to somebody where the staff and our team would feel it was entirely different and a different place to come to work the following day. And there's been a really good cultural fit, to be honest with you.
And they are north of England and they are different. They are very nice people.
Absolutely, 100%. And everything they've done, they've said they would do, they've done everything they said they wouldn't do, they didn't do. So that's all you can ask. And they're very supportive of us. It's great.
Now, I do not envy you nor begrudge you 1 cent, but there is this issue, and it's kind of raised by Enterprise Ireland, that they want Irish companies to remain self-owned, to grow and grow and grow.
Yeah.
But not unlike many, many other Irish companies, you took the shilling and gave it away.
Wanted to make the place bigger.
26 million shillings in the first instance.
Yeah, that's true. And I've heard that argument before, that there is often a ceiling in Ireland with the size of the business before exits are done. I think it's changing. I think there's an awful lot more indigenous large businesses now than there was even 10 years ago. And the other thing is, how are you going to get bigger if you don't use what's out there in terms of acquirers? It's a great way of getting bigger. So I think there's merits to hanging on, but there's also merits to selling.
Are you constrained by language? And I don't know the answer to this. Are you English language only?
Yes, we are.
Yeah. And would you go Spanish or?
I say we're English language only. We have worked with a partner who's translated our program into Brazilian Portuguese for the market there.
Portuguese.
Sorry.
I love that. Portuguese.
You should do our translation for us. And we're working with another partner soon on another translation. So we do it if the partner works with us in the market and says, look, there's a commercial opportunity here. But very much English is the language of marketing globally, to be honest with you.
And since you know everything about marketing, he says, watching Ken squirm, is there a similarity? Is there just a very great similarity right across all markets in what they're looking for in marketing?
The platforms that people use, in other words, Google, Meta, Facebook, Twitter, X now, they're very similar.
And how they are used, I mean, do the Germans, I know we're talking about language there, but would an Australian versus an American versus an Irish person use the same methods in the same way?
Typically, yes. But there are certain platforms and sites that are used, particularly to say in China, a very different set of Tencent is used there, Baidu is used instead of other websites that we use here. So there is markets where things are different, but the principles and approach of digital marketing are actually pretty similar across the board.
And you mentioned China. There is a big market.
It is. But firstly, all the platforms are different, so we'd have to have an entirely new range of products.
You can charge more for that.
Yeah, maybe we could, yeah. But we're in Hong Kong, which I suppose is...
But in English language.
Correct.
And are you in India?
We are through a partner again, so yeah.
Vast.
Yeah, vast, yeah.
1.5 billion people there.
And a big belief in education, actually.
Yeah.
I think the biggest challenge in India is probably the average order value is
because
expensive.
They haven't got the income, yeah.
Correct.
Yeah. But then again, you can do it by volume, so...
Correct. There's always options.
So, the future?
I think we're only in the door with BPP since February, so we're just enjoying being part of a new organisation and seeing what we can do with them, to be honest.
But you've done 65,000, is that what you told me?
100,000 is next, really, as the big target.
And when will you do that?
Well, you see, if you ask someone else who worked in our organisation, they'd always say longer than I would. So I'd like, if we could do it in the next 12 months, to be honest with you.
That'd be cool, mm-hmm. Yeah. And again, that builds and builds and builds and gets the,
exactly,
the name across, yeah?
Yeah, it does.
And any chance you'd be sold again?
BPP will be sold at some stage in the future because they're owned by a private equity firm.
So, of course. I forgot. Yeah,
so
of course,
they will be sold at some stage in the future. I don't know when.
Go back to the BPP University. Is there a physical university?
Yes, there is, yeah. They have...
Based where?
One in London. They've also centres in Birmingham and Manchester.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any chance of bringing one over here?
Potentially, but...
Oh, finally, I found something. My headline is now going to be New University Opens in Ireland.
I don't think it'll be the university they bring over here, but maybe some of their other stuff will be brought over here. I think their big market in the UK is international students coming into the UK to study at master's level. That's what their big market is.
If looking forward again, because I love that kind of stuff, is what would you keep a very keen eye on in terms of what people should be marketing for the next, say, 12 to 18 months? What will be used? What will be the hot topic? What will be...
The whole world is talking about AI and how that is going to be used.
Is it going to pan out as is suggested, or do you think...
My instinct is that it's one of the biggest changes we've seen since the birth of the internet. How it works out and how it pans out... No idea just yet.
Yeah, don't think anybody does really.
No, I think the only thing to do is just stay close to it and see how it develops. I think it's, for marketing people, a good thing in general. Learn the tools, learn the techniques, try things. That's all you can do now.
You know what I like about it? It helps people spell because the machine spells, not human spell. Don't get me going on that. Anyway, we won't go there. There is, and you know this, that there's always the final question that we ask all our guests is, who would Ken Fitzpatrick hire in a heartbeat?
So, two.
That's fine.
First is my wife, because she's the smartest person I know.
And you had to say that as well.
Exactly.
And what is your wife's name? You can't just call her wife.
It's Anne-Marie Healy.
Anne-Marie Healy, okay. And she is an accountant.
She is.
And does she have her own practice? Or?
No, she doesn't. No, she's finished work now. She's formerly of Independent News and Media, PLC. So
the second one, are they not? Oh, I see what you mean. They're formerly of
Independent. She's formerly of Independent.
Because they are now
Media House. Yeah. Correct, yeah.
And she's not Media House.
No, she wasn't. No.
Okay, I'm with you.
So second person is a guy called Ricardo Semler. And Ricardo Semler is a Brazilian business person who took over his family business and I think turned the business from $4 million US dollars revenue a year to $200 million. But it was how he did it, which was interesting. Now, this book is, he wrote a book called Maverick, which is first published in 1988. So it's going back a while. But what I loved was he was a manufacturing business and he just changed the way they worked. So eventually the employees set their own production quotas and they would stay late to get it done because they'd set the quotas, they managed their own expenses, they implemented profit sharing. They just basically turned everything that you would traditionally have thought about running a business, particularly a manufacturing environment, upside down. And what I loved was the way he thought about problems and new solutions. That's why I think I'd love to work with him because of the way he thinks
about
things.
And he's still on planet Earth?
He is, yeah.
Oh, cool.
I actually looked it up because I was going to say it. He wrote another book quite recently. And I think he's still involved in the business, maybe in an ambassadorial capacity. But yeah, he's still on planet Earth. But so again, quite some time ago. So, and it's been a while since I read the book, but just that way of thinking about things as being different. There's always a different way of doing things and the focus on people. I love that.
And he, as you said, you went from $4 to $200 million.
$4 to $200 million. You and I don't even know when the 200 million was. It could be twice that size now.
And you know, BPP and TDR are going to listen to this and they're going to say, okay, go ahead, Ken.
I know, yeah. So
a little noose around your neck.
It's also fun, isn't it? You know,
that's the idea.
So it's a challenge and exciting at the same time.
We'll give Ricardo a buzz and see whether he'll come on board.
Well, you can speak Brazilian Portuguese to him.
No, I can say the one word Portuguese.
Portuguese, sorry. I got it wrong again.
That's Ronaldo for you. Anyway, That is really, really fascinating. And just a final, I always think of the final question. You said in about a year and a half, that you might have 100,000 under the belt. Do you think even much bigger than that? I mean, is it infinite? I mean, could you do, I'm not saying in the next 2 years, half a million.
Yeah, you could. There's absolutely no doubt that we will get there, actually.
Infinite.
I think there's a constraint in the market from the number of marketers that are actually out there. But as we said earlier, there's people outside of marketing who need to know the basics and principles of it. So it's quite a big market is the short answer. And yeah, you wouldn't run out of room at 500,000.
Dentists and marketing, there's a thought.
Yeah.
I feel the same.
Ken Fitzpatrick, CEO of DMI, or the Digital Marketing Institute, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thanks a million, Conor. It was great.
That Great Business Show.
Defacto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. Defacto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. Defacto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
Are you buying or selling a home? If it's for sale, it's on daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website.
Travel to Connecticut, USA with Aer Lingus service to Bradley International Airport. With the daily flights from Dublin to Hartford, we make business travel to Connecticut easy. Save time with US pre-clearance, enjoy Aer Lingus award-winning flight service, and experience the convenience of Bradley International Airport, perfectly situated for your travel needs. Learn more and plan your next business trip at aerlingus.com.
All That Great Business Show advertisers are Team GBS approved. Back them.
On episode 156 of That Great Business Show, we heard from Conor McEnroy, chair of Sud Amery's Bank, about how and why it can cost about $1 million to move $50 million in cash from one country to another. It's a great listen. You should really check that one out. That's a cost to business and someone has to pay for it. And that someone is, well, of course, you guessed it, you and me. Now, cash is not going to go away totally anytime soon, but for every good reason, there are many fintech companies that are trying to take the hassle out of digital payment and to speed things up, even if they can't make those who are slow to pay, pay more quickly. And one such fintech company is Dublin-headquartered No Friction, F-R-I-X-I-O-N, that wants to change the way business pays. A year ago, they raised 3.6 million euro to accelerate its growth. No Friction says it wants to save customers up to 95% on the cost of the payment and to make the payment process either invisible or, they say, an enjoyable event. Well, they should know that it's already enjoyable to get paid, maybe not so much when you're doing the paying. Fergal Brady is CEO and co-founder of No Friction and joins me now in studio. Fergal, you're very, very welcome.
Thank you very much, Conor. Nice to be here.
Actually, you love getting paid, but you don't love paying.
Well, I hate paying because it's so difficult to pay these days. So, in fact, that's how the whole idea of No Friction came about, because I was sitting there, I was in Madrid at the time, trying to buy a fan online. And as you may or may not know, credit cards are brilliant. They're great to use. Tap, pay, all the rest of it. Not a great way to pay online. And it generally takes me half an hour to pay for anything online. And in the end, I couldn't buy my fan because you can't use an Irish credit card in Spain on a lot of e-commerce sites. So they just
wouldn't accept it.
Well,
is
credit
it not
cards,
Visas, for example, to take a name?
Yeah, it's very difficult, but credit cards were designed originally back in 1960, I think the first one came out, and we've hacked them to work on the internet.
There is a great TV program that I've forgotten. It was a woman professor of maths who was brilliant, and she actually went through it. And the whole history is fantastic. It's up on BBC Two or something, or Channel Four, somewhere like that.
Yeah, it's great.
Fantastic.
That's where the Diners Club one came about. So a guy was in paying for his bill in the club, and of course, oh, I forgot my wallet. A likely story, sir. So he came up with the idea of issuing a card. I think then the 16 digits or whatever came along, which is fine. It's great. You know, tap to pay is fantastic, but online it's really, really cumbersome. And of course, what happened was around the world, the problem with fraud, etc., became such a big thing that the EU had to enforce security on it. And of course, how that security is actually enforced varies from place to place, etc. And so it's become a trial now to actually pay for anything online. So, you know, Apple Pay or Google Pay makes it really easy, much, much easier. But a lot of the time, it's just a chore to pay for something.
It certainly is getting more difficult. And then you have to have a phone and you have to have a phone signal. And then when you're trying to pay on the phone, but you...
Don't get me started. And then you get the text message, confirm this payment, and you go, yes, we haven't received any reply from you. Yes, no, now we've blocked your card. Yeah, so it's a big problem. And the other problem, of course, highlighted in the media, I think there was an article in the Independent coming out today about the high cost of fees for online. And of course, that's down to just the complexity of accepting payments. So
it's also down to making money, come on.
Let's face it, but it is. But the problem is that the merchant, I think a lot of the time, doesn't see that. And the consumer ultimately gets hit with the underlying costs. So what the EU have done, in fact, is they've introduced this pay-by-bank concept, which people might think is just a method of, I have to pay and wait for a transfer to be made, and it's going to be days, and I have to log into internet banking, and there's nothing worse. It's like a trip to hell, logging into internet banking. So pay-by-bank is a way of instant bank transfer, and it's one of the very small pieces of our armory, but pay-by-bank enables an instant bank transfer much faster, much cheaper, much more efficient. And crucially, the merchant gets the funds pretty much instantly, and there's almost zero chance of fraud. Not zero, but almost zero. There's always a chance. So it's becoming really popular, actually. Yeah.
So that is part of the armory.
Part of the armory.
Do you discuss the other 99.9%?
Yeah, I can. First of all, we're not a payments company. We're a tech company, and we're focused on embedded finance. And embedded finance...
Thank God I said fintech.
There you go. Yeah, or actually tech fin is another way of putting it. So we're primarily a technology company, and we were involved in the area of embedded finance. Embedded finance is something that's come around over the past number of years, and it's been referred to as the fourth part of the technology stack.
But so, of course, I was only saying the other day, it's the fourth part.
There you go.
Of that.
Yeah, I thought I overheard people on the Lewis on the way here talking about it, you know. But the first one, of course, was connectivity, where you had the internet enabling access to all this information. The second was intelligence with cloud computing, and then ubiquity, that was mobile. But the big key to unlocking the value and the internet per se is fintech, and in particular embedded finance. And what that means is embedding financial products and services within your actual tech stack and enable you to participate in the value chain. So for businesses who have large numbers of consumers or other businesses, enabling them to participate in the transfer, the value transfer.
Case study, please.
Probably the easiest way of looking at it is something like Uber. Everyone's familiar with Uber. So Uber actually participating in the transfer of funds. So when you pay for your taxi or your car, Uber are actually generating revenue from that payment. So they're not only just enabling you to pay, but they're actually participating in the value transfer and obtaining a commission on it. That's an example of embedded finance and them participating in the value chain.
What's the difference between that and me tapping my Visa card?
Uber, in that case, are actually participating as part of the payment process. You, in the end of the day, you as the consumer, don't notice anything.
Okay.
For you, you just make the payment. But ordinarily, for most businesses, they just see payments as something that has to be done to enable them to get paid, but they can't participate in it. So companies like No Friction enable businesses to actually participate in the value chain and generate revenue from the payment process.
Okay, so you're making a little bit extra on the side there.
Correct.
Now, you've got a bit of form in business. This is not your first time out.
No, it's not the first rodeo. That's right. Yeah. So,
so you know what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, I like to think we've done a few things in business before. All right.
Discuss.
Yeah. I suppose the first business that myself and Aaron, my co-founder, we had a company called Blueface IP Telephony Company, which was an overnight success. So after 15 years, it was sold to Comcast. and we both did a few other things, like we did a couple of other different startups and so on. But No Friction came about. As I say, we were just really frustrated with banking and payments and with our experience of interacting with the financial world and how the only portal into the financial world was internet banking. And if you think paying online is difficult, try paying 1,000 people, new people on internet banking. You need a team of people to do it. So this is a really hidden area that nobody knows about. And what we're doing is we're taking the pain away from businesses to make payments and receive payments, identify them and reconcile them. That's really what we do.
And how do you do that? I mean, just so you've made my brain kind of jump there. 1,000 people, I understand, you just recruited them. They need to be paid on the first of Friday or whatever.
Yeah.
And what do you do?
Well, what normally you do is you'd take out your internet dongle, your a couple of mobile phones. You'd try and remember the password for internet banking. You can't remember it, so you've written it down, which kind of defeats the purpose. And you scroll through all the list of passwords that you have.
Oh, so eventually, I'm not the only one?
No, no, you and half the planet. Yeah, and then you can't remember it and you just put down your kid's birthday or something and you get in. So, but anyway, no, seriously, people would just log into internet banking, set up a new beneficiary, go and call Mary or Steve or John to come and authorise that beneficiary, and then they have to log into internet banking and they have to go through the whole process, and then that's authorised. Then you have to set up the first payment, and there's only 999 to go. So after half an hour, you've done the first one.
And what do you guys do differently?
So what we do is we've created effectively created a current account, which has an IBAN or account number, as you'd be familiar with. It's got access to all the different payments methods. So you'd be familiar with SEPA and SEPA Instant, which is fantastic. It allows you to move and receive funds instantly, connectivity to those. So you can receive payments instantly, but then we wrap it in a piece of software and you can drop it into your accounting platform or your ERP. So when you do your payroll and you get all your list of people to pay, you press a button, it calls our software and says, hey, we got these 1,000 people to pay. Here's their bank account numbers. Here's the amount. Here's when to pay them. Go ahead and do it. And then you get a list of people to pay and you can authorize it or have several people authorize it. So it reduces a task of 15 hours down to 5 minutes.
Sounds clever.
It's pretty good.
And the only one? Anybody else doing it?
Yeah, there's a few people who might skirt around the edges and do little bits. Like one of the traditional ways of doing it is you download a file from your accounting platform and then you upload it to one of the banking platforms and then you've got a similar kind of process, but it's pretty clunky. Being able to do it just seamlessly and electronically is fantastic. But that's just one example. The big thing, actually, when you think about it, is receiving payments. So making payments, that's one area. Receiving payments is a whole different ballgame. So if you're one small business, you might receive a couple of payments a day. You log into your internet banking, you scroll through the payments, you identify them. You can probably work out what they're for. So let's say you're a bigger organization and you get like 1,000 payments a day and people might not put the reference on it and they put on car or food or, microphone. And there's 1,000 payments of 1,000 euro for 1,000 microphones and everyone put microphone. And you have no idea what they're for. Who paid it? Or was it, no idea. That's a big, big problem. And actually, the larger the business, they might have 25, 30 people working in accounts payable or accounts receivable. And they're trying to solve this problem. And it's all because the only window into their financial information is through an internet banking portal, which just isn't sufficient in today's instant economy. So what we do is we enable them to receive the payments effectively directly into their accounting or ERP. So they're identified, tagged, and reconciled instantly, immediately. So the days of having to have 25 people are gone. You just need to have one, maybe.
Now, you've been at this a couple of years. So are you now mature? Or are you work in progress? Or is it one of those things that is forever work in progress because as technology keeps going, you have to keep going?
Yeah, there was a couple of things about it. So there was two aspects to our business. The first business was building the technology. We've built a core banking platform. That's what we've built.
And when we say we, who are we talking about?
Well, myself and Aaron, my co-founder in the business, and the rest of the team in the business.
How big is the team?
We are over 20 now and growing. So we've built out the platform, proven it, tested it, working really, really well, lots of customers on board. But the other big thing that we had to do was go and get regulatory approval from the Central Bank of Ireland.
I know where this is going.
Yeah. So in order to
That was easy, was it?
Yeah, I wouldn't say easy.
Nobody has ever said easy intricate. On central bank.
Yeah, it was intricate. It was extremely professional. It was extremely engaging. It was eye-opening and extremely valuable.
What was the eye-opening part?
Yeah, about things that you wouldn't necessarily think about. Because one of the problems with moving funds is that you're responsible as a financial institution for ensuring that there are no bad actors involved in the chain, which we can get to about your cash story in a little bit. So you need to have all these different checks and balances and policies and procedures in place. And there's just things that you mightn't necessarily think about. And so having to go through that regulatory process is extremely interesting and rewarding. From an information point of view, it's fantastic because you learn about some of the things that you might not necessarily have thought about or thought about enough. So we found it really, really engaging. And we did it all ourselves, of course, as well. So we had to go and read up about all the legislation, all the different policies and procedures, etc. So anyway, we had to go and get authorized, because when you want to hold money, move funds, etc., you need to get regulated.
And are you now authorized?
We are indeed, yeah.
And that gives you European authorization, does it?
The possibility of passporting into all the European countries.
Yeah. Possibility, or is it just
it's
a given?
It's not automatic. We need to apply to do it, yeah.
And are you going to?
We are, yeah. Yeah.
And does thank you, Brexit, does that mean that you have to a different chat with the UK Central
it
Bank of
indeed.
England?
Yeah, 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 with the FCA, it does, of course, yeah. Yeah.
And is there, are those chats going on?
We have a solution. So we already provide UK accounts and the ability to connect to faster payments in the UK, equivalent of SEPA Instant. So yeah, we do that. We have it covered.
And I asked earlier, was that, are you now mature? You're ready to go?
Or yeah,
you're ready to be taken over by Visa or somebody nice?
No. We're in this because we like doing it. And
what happened to the last one? You sold it, was it?
Yeah, after 15 years. Yeah. No, we're a scale-up now. So we've really moved beyond the startup stage. We're a scale-up. We've got some very significant organizations using the platform already. It's obviously, you know, this is early days in the embedded finance world. I think within the next 5 years, the way that corporations, businesses do their banking and payments is going to be fundamentally different.
What will it be like in 5-10 years?
Well, I think that the process will be largely invisible to the business or end user, and that you won't actually see a bank in the middle, in the same way that, you know, for many people, a visit to the bank branch is quite rare. I think a visit to the internet banking will be quite rare, that you shouldn't need to have to go there. So
I will thank you every day if that happens, Nobody likes that, I don't think. Yeah.
No.
What's the dream? What are you going to do, and when are you going to do it? You've raised your cash, but have you raised enough cash?
Yeah. We're in a pretty good position, I have to say. We're getting our customers on board. We're building out the platform. We've got a really great team, amazing team. So the goal now over the next 12 months, we got the authorization there in the end of June. Or in the July, rather. And so we're just building on that now, which we knew we would.
Where would your big markets be? US? Europe?
No, it's all about Europe, yeah. I probably won't bore your listeners getting into differences between the EU and the US from a regulatory point of view, but very briefly, a fintech in the US is typically an unregulated organization. They partner with a bank, whereas in the EU have come up with legislation to enable tech companies to participate as a financial institution by getting authorized. So it's very different. So the
that
EU
sounds clever,
market.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, like the EU get a bad press from time to time, but they've done some absolutely sterling stuff in terms of opening up financial markets, I have to say. It's a lot done, a lot more to go, I think. But
wild amount more to go from what you're actually saying, are you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a huge amount to do. The amount of funds that are moved electronically by businesses on a day-to-day basis is enormous.
I mean, when you say enormous, it must be wildly big.
I mean, the figures make no sense. It's in the trillion, so it doesn't matter. It's just a ridiculous amount. And it's particularly
where are you getting your cut? Are you getting a little bit of that?
Yeah, well, what we do is we provide our platform and we provide it as a service.
So. And is it per transaction or per value?
No, it's typically mainly as a platform. Yeah, it's a platform charge. So we're saying to you, you no longer need these 5, 10, 100 people in your accounting department trying to find out what this transaction is. We take all that pain away, and these people can go off and do things which are more productive than going line by line through bank statements.
Now, as you said, you'd spent the first 15 years becoming an overnight success. Yeah. How quickly will this one become huge?
Yeah, well, who knows? We do it, as I said, because we like it. We're inspired by it, and we're trying to fix a problem that we experienced and which really annoyed us.
That's the sales pitch. When will you have 1,000 or 10,000 or 100,000 staff?
Yeah. Well, the idea actually is to build a business that you don't need one that size.
I love those ones.
And actually, it's kind of linked to your, you know, we were talking a little bit at the top of the show about cash, you know.
Yeah, talk to me about that.
Yeah, so nobody wants cash to go away. People like cash. And I think there's been a lot of discussion about the digital euro, for example, and whether or not that's going to, you know, take over cash. And people are worried about Big Brother and all the rest of it. But of course, the two are just, you know, moving in parallel. I think digital euro is a great idea because it'll facilitate so much more seamless transactions.
And that is different to crypto now.
I suppose to very, very simply, when you talk about cryptography, and we're interested actually from a business point of view in Bitcoin Lightning because it's an amazing technology, and I won't get into it now, but when you talk about crypto, you're talking about removing a trusted central party from a value transfer. And when you remove the trusted central party, which is a bank or a central bank, you're talking about doing it with mathematics, which is insanely difficult. It's just really hard. When you're talking about something like a digital euro, you're basically talking about a big spreadsheet and tracking the digital euros on a big spreadsheet, you know, so it's centralized. That's the difference.
And they are also backed by the ECB at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly, okay. Yeah. So it's really interesting. I really like the idea. But the problem, as you said, with cash is you know, it could cost you €1 million to transfer 50 million.
It's nuts, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's obvious, you know, there's the, my father worked in a post office and was held up loads of times by people coming in, pointing guns at him, asking him to hand the cash over. So I'm pretty familiar with the
problems.
Another
good reason to get rid of cash.
Reason to get rid of cash, you know. So what's happened, you've got the problems there. And then on the electronic fund side, you've got all the other problems with money laundering, with financial crime of all sorts. You've got terrorist financing, etc. So you have to build similar infrastructure around the movement of electronic funds, and it's just as expensive. And the reason I got onto this subject is that traditionally that identifying money laundering in electronic funds transfer is incredibly manual. It's unbelievably manual, and it's completely ineffective. So when you've got cash moving,
so all
it's
of
one
this
thing.
Time we're
electronic
being asked,
is another thing.
Every time we go into the bank, we have to prove that we're not drug dealers.
Yeah,
that's all bull.
Well, it's not bull. It's actually extremely useful, and it's necessary. Of course, unless you're in the sort of category of moving, you know, billions, and you go and pay a team of lawyers to sue you if you make any mention of it, that's completely different. So you got very different categories as usual. But identifying electronic money laundering and terrorist financing is extremely difficult and very manual. So we're, of course, trying to work within the bounds of the regulatory guidelines to ensure that we can automate it as much as possible.
And cash is not going to disappear. We're kind of agreed on that.
No,
but
not.
Will it still cost $1 million to shift $50 million, even using your technology?
Yeah, almost certainly. Yeah, we don't really get involved with cash at all. Just to give you a sort of sense of the sort of absurdity and difficulty of it all, within the financial system, you might have, let's say, the bunch of US banks. And if you're in South America, let's say you're in Mexico, and you have a correspondent bank in the US, well, that correspondent bank won't deal with you if they think that you're dealing with lots of cash, because they think, well, if you're dealing with lots of cash, well, you must be something wrong. But of course, you've got lots of perfectly ordinary, you know, Mexican shop owners coming in with cash every day. And it's got so bad that one single shop owner might have to open 50 bank accounts so he can go and lodge cash, because he can't lodge it with one. That's how absurd and bizarre it's come, you know. So it's really expensive to move cash.
So back to the other for last question, which was, what's the big vision? What are you going
to
do?
Well, the big vision is to become Europe's leading embedded finance platform to enable the seamless transfer of money between businesses and between consumers and businesses.
And when will that be?
Well, we're building it right now. Building it right now. You know, it takes a long time to build anything of value. So I think, you know, it's probably going to be a good 5 years before this becomes really mainstream. Although we've been pleasantly surprised at the number of companies who've come looking to us now to solve some of the problems they have. So maybe it'll be a bit sooner.
I like the name No Friction.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Well, it does. Yeah.
Not so sure about the spelling, but I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, it's a tech company. It has to be somewhat different.
Final question we ask everybody. Mm. Who would you hire in a heartbeat?
Yeah, I was thinking about that on the way in. Patch Good. Adams. Have you ever seen the movie Patch Adams?
No.
You need to go and look it up. It's fantastic. Robin Williams plays Patch Adams, which is a true story of a doctor who... Well,
I beg your pardon, yeah. I have.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. And just sees the world differently.
Yeah.
And I like people to see the world differently, because... I remember I was in school and had a wonderful, I've actually blessed with a lot of wonderful English teachers, and one in particular always talked to me about perspective and vantage point, and how it's always great to, you know, stand on the table or, you know, look at things in different ways. And I think people who come from different industries look at things in different ways. So Patch Adams, I think, for me.
I had a lovely English teacher as well, and he made me think and view the world differently.
Yeah.
And kind of, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Teachers, we like them.
We do. We do. I owe a lot to them.
Fergal Brady, co-founder of No Friction, thank you so much for joining us on That Great Business Show.
Thank you very much, Conor.
If it's for sale, it's on daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. Whether you're looking for your first home or planning your next move, make sure you're on daft.ie. The best place to buy or sell in Ireland.
De Facto, the revolutionary shaving oil, changing the face of shaving. For the smoothest shave of your life, just add water. No more lathering up or cleaning up afterward. Just add a few drops of water and you're ready to go. DeFacto's blend of all natural oils hydrates and protects your skin. No more razor burns or irritation. A spa treatment for your face. Perfect for all skin types and lasts so much longer than traditional foams or gels. DeFacto, a shaving revolution. Just add water. Available from selected pharmacies and from defactoshave.com.
It's all go, let Chrissy know on thatgreatbusinessshow.com.
That Great Business Show.
And that is it from That Great Business Show, episode 162. Great business insights and inspiration, all thanks to our lovely sponsor, Daft.ie, Ireland's number one property website. If you are looking for your first home, or maybe you're looking to upsize or downsize, make sure to visit daft.ie to find that next place you call home. Sign up for email updates and we will send you your own personal copy of the podcast at thatgreatbusinessshow.com. And that is where to go if you would like to advertise to the finest business audience in the land. We record at the Dublin South Podcast Studios, where the sound quality is always digitally pure. And our lead purist today is studio engineer Terry Brock. Later, the purest of the pure, studio manager Peter Royce, will distill our handiwork to make sure we remain the world's best sounding business podcast. So from me, Conal O'Moran, buichas to you all. Agus slán tamall.